if you look under guests, you'll see Paula's name, and then look for Paula's photos. I'd like you to load those photos up, so we're going to get there in just a couple minutes. Right now, we're going back to Shasta, and she is at the end, I guess, of a three-day event, and you're about to be taken out in the forest to meet somebody special. Tell us what's going on here.
Yeah, and the drawing is on that he has long blonde hair and a long face. What happened was there were two people already down there, and I went with these other two ladies, so there was five of us total, and when I got down to the log that started the tree line there, there was a 10-foot tall man standing against the tree, and he was 10 feet tall, and he had a hoodie on, and he had a jumpsuit, like he had just come out of a gym, and he was speaking constantly in a language I did not understand at all, period. So I had hold the hands of these other two ladies, Mercedes and Suyapa, and they were, you know, Spanish ladies, and Ricardo said, I can't come down, but when you get down there, you have to let go of their hands, he said, because each of you will have a different experience. Well, my experience with this guy, this man, who is standing there against the tree, and I have that photo there, too.
Where is it on your site?
It's actually one of the photos you see.
We're going to see it. Okay. All right.
Yeah,
we're
you get see
there.
Us and you see a tree.
All right.
You see a tree in Shasta. And I'm looking at him, and Jeff, I don't know what to do. I mean, there is no protocol for looking at.
No, a 10-foot tall man with a 10-foot tall hoodie. Feet tall.
I know. He was there talking and talking and talking. At the end of about 2.5 minutes of what sounded like it was an echo how he was talking, at the very end, he said, like a robot, very much robotic, he said, thank you, turns around and walks back into the forest.
Oh, how weird. How really strange.
And I said to myself, did I hear him correctly?
Uh-huh.
Am I going out of my mind? Did he say thank you? And what did he say thank you for? And I'm going, you know, when I ran up to Ricardo, who was up on the hill, I said, I think he said thank you. And he goes, of course, because you were invited. And I thought, well, my whole career started with Close Encounters. My whole career started with Hynek because I went to look for
right.
Hynek.
Right.
Yeah. And because I'd seen Close Encounters, and I was crying at the end of that film. And here's like 30 years later, I'm in the forest and I'm having the same kind of Close Encounter thing.
Right.
The only thing I can tell your audience, you're never prepared for anything like that. There is no way that, I mean, I
no, how could you be?
Do.
Of course not.
Just, and you're not
you've got nothing in the basket upstairs that it matches. Nothing.
Nothing.
Okay, so he's talking for a couple of minutes in a language you couldn't understand. Did it just sound like a language of letters and vowels and consonants?
It sounded like Spanish, but it wasn't Spanish.
All right.
And then what Ricardo told me was it was called IRDIN, I-R-D-I-N, and that the contacts in Latin America know about this language.
Hmm.
Also in Brazil,
mm-hmm.
they know about it in Brazil and different places. It was called IRDIN. All I could say is, but I understood, thank you, I understood that part. And then the following
What did he
year,
have a beard? What did he look like? We'll see pictures here, but...
He looked like the blonde that you see, except he had brown eyes, honey
right.
brown eyes.
Okay.
Do you see a drawing of a long-haired blonde guy?
All right. Well, let's go ahead and look at
and
these
that,
pictures.
And he looked like that because I saw him a second time.
Uh-huh.
The year later, as a holographic image, and he was blonde. His hair was flying in the breeze, and he had on a white jumpsuit that looked like a bicycle suit. But that time was a hologram, and the reason why in 2015 I had to go back was because Ricardo and all his people thought that I had to get the message, and I didn't get it, and it was encrypted, and so they dragged me back into the forest in Shasta. This is the sand flats for the people who want to know. And I was so freaked out, I couldn't handle it. I could not handle it. Because because I saw him in the through the trees. I saw him as a hologram, and because I saw the tube come down from the sky, he was there with two other beings, but I knew it was him. He looked right at me. Beautiful face. But the message that I got in my sleep that night, because I couldn't even calm down enough for him to communicate with me, was, if you will lead, we will match your efforts.
Oh, that's an interesting message. I see the picture. Yeah.
We will match your efforts. So I always tell everybody, if you have an encounter, it's not because they're on vacation and they don't know what else to do. If you have an encounter, they want you to do something.
Where are we? Now, before we jump into the pictures, and I really look forward to this, where are we in general terms regarding contactees and abductees? Different races are doing their biological work and abducting us. What's going on?
No, that's over.
David Jacobs was right. It was he.
No,
David
no,
said
not
it was.
At
a,
all. No,
what do you think?
No. First of all, without going into details, a lot of the early researchers were paid to have a certain view. And I'm not going to go into it in detail, but listen to Stephen Greer when he says what he says. He's telling the truth, because I was in Europe and I knew this was all going on. And the thing, when you have clients that only have negative experiences, there's something wrong there. I had John Mack in my apartment in Rome, and he told me that for his part, the genetic harvesting ended in 1994. People were being directly downloaded, he said, including his friends, that people were getting, in other words, if you meditate and rest, somebody can talk to you. And John Mack had changed his mind even about the abductions. I think that whoever micromanages contact is very happy with the Betty and Barney Hill situation from the 60s, and it took over our whole entire field.
Yes, it did.
That's all there is. You see, and it's ridiculous. You see these statues, these blow-up graves. I mean, any self-respecting scientist would not go into a conference that had alien statues that were just gray and these stupid-looking things. And I know you've talked to Frank, because I've had a lot of conversations. Who came to visit us in the 50s and 60s were space people.
Sure.
And they left us in the 70s, went down to Latin America. And I will also go on record, Jeff, to say I went to Schmidt Rudy. I was with Billy Meyer. That was real.
Okay. Very good. All right,
it's a real story.
All right.
Photoshop didn't show up until 1992. Those pictures were 1970. And not only
I think
that,
something, my personal feeling is something happened there. I don't know what it is. I don't know the totality of it.
The Japanese came in and bought all the movies.
That's what I heard. That's true?
Yes. They told me. I was there. I was in Switzerland. I saw the movies, too, and the crafter over a highway with the cars coming underneath.
What the hell did the Japanese do with it? They spent a lot of money on that. Where are the films?
Well, the Japanese also bought Maurizio Cavallo's material. You see one of the slides that has Japanese on the top, and he had Polaroids of the beings, and then that's part of what I gave you. The Maurizio Cavallo case is in Vercelli, Northern Italy, and he met people from Clarion, and he pulled out these Polaroids, and the only people interested, because we debunk our people.
Yeah,
we spend a lot of time saying they're a hoax. So we debunk them. The Japanese come in, they buy everything, they take care of everything. And if that happened, if the Billy Meyer case happened here in America, you know how everybody would eat them alive, because they'd say, oh, the pictures are too good, which is the most stupid.
That's you're correct. You're totally correct.
Stupid.
Yeah.
What an excuse. I mean, Photoshop didn't happen until 1992.
Right. Well, when we passed across that digital age threshold, we did run into some real problems. And unfortunately, people take advantage of it.
Yeah, but what I say to the Billy Meyer people is, did you go there? Did you speak to him? I spoke to the townspeople, the people in the town.
Oh, smart. That's a journalist at work. Good.
Yeah, then I also saw the tree where the hole went. I saw everything, and I began to understand that the Swiss government was not excited about having pilgrimages. You know,
All right. I gotcha.
If we have somebody here, you go to his house. Well, in fact, Howard Menger in New Jersey, in High Bridge, New Jersey, he denied his case because he was sick and tired of all the pilgrimages of all the faithful that wanted him to say, to heal their children.
We spend a lot of time on Howard Menger and the whole Valthor thing. We got some pictures of that too. Go ahead.
There's also a picture that's historical there of Howard Menger talking to Condon, you know, Edward Condon here in 1969 at the Condon Committee at Colorado, the University of Colorado. What's he doing there with his book, talking to Condon, if he denied his story? I mean,
That's an interesting question. Let's go to the pictures now. Are you able to see these, Paula?
No.
As we go through them? Okay, the first picture is it's an open box, and there's two pieces of white flattened material on the top.
Okay, those are the casts from Orthon from the Adamski case. George Hunt Williamson made plaster casts. Actually, they made two sets of plaster casts. So we know for a fact Orthon really did land at Desert Center. That book that I just mentioned, They Are Here, Visitors Without Passports, even has an enlargement of Orthon's face because they were able, because there were six people there, so they saw Adamski go talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the message was anti-nuclear. And that's
In the 1950s, of course, when those tests were going off, I would think that we made a bad turn along the way in this whole nuclear issue.
We went wrong. But what Orthon said, which is really interesting, he told Adamski we could have a whole economy around space travel and we could go out into outer space and meet these people. But if we stayed on a war economy, he said we'd have to create the wars.
Right. Exactly. And we're damn close to another one, unfortunately. Several of them.
So we have to create them to get the economy to be a war economy.
Yes.
If we had gone to the space economy, we would have met these people by now. And then that does produce money.
Too bad we weren't given the option, Paula. I mean, technically we had it, but we, the people, didn't. All right. Next picture is of a desert scene. This is a desert with mountains in the background, or hills, and blue sky. What are we looking at here? You remember? It's a desert with, it looks like a wash in the middle of it. Very arid, very pretty picture. It's arid.
It's probably the Atacama Desert where I went
That would be it. Yeah.
Ricardo, I'm going to try to pull up some of them, but...
That's very high, by the way, that desert. I forget how high it is, but it's up.
Oh, it's 13,000 feet.
Yeah, it's very high.
Jeff, this is just an aside. I ended up in the hospital because of the altitude.
Wow.
But I went anyway because I knew there was going to be contact and I wanted the message, so I went anyway.
Right.
But I can't handle the altitude.
Well, that Atacama Desert is an extraordinary location. There's a lot going on there for sure. Okay, the next picture that we have is... an old black and white photo. It says Alice K. Wells.
Yeah, that's Adamski, and those are the people that were with him, and they're looking at they're making the plaster casts of Orthon, which means that's evidence. So the Adamski story's been thrown out, and it's ridiculous. It's all real and documented. And I happened to meet Desmond Leslie, who wrote the books on Adamski later on.
Hmm.
I met him later on in Italy with Colonel Corso.
Desmond Leslie. I know that name.
Yeah, he was an RAF pilot who wrote, Flying Saucers Have Landed.
Yeah. Okay, next picture is a color picture of Adamski holding his right hand up. He's got a suit on.
Yeah, well, basically he was given a lot of information, and it had to do with the sun as a source of energy.
Mm-hmm.
He was given the Adamski Foundation with Glenn Steckling. In fact, I hope you have him on sometime. We'll give you details about the real contact that Adamski had at Desert Center and in San Diego. And it's important because Adamski went all over the world, and we had an Adamski too, Eugenio Siracusa, who saw these Venusians, these people from Venus, and he also got the same message, and he had to go all over Europe. And Adamski even went to see Pope John the 23rd, because Pope John the 23rd had had a contact at Castel Gandolfo with one of these blonde people and said, you know, there's messages coming.
Right,
I mean,
very
these
interesting.
People are coming to Earth, you know, and, and it was a key time, 50s and 60s.
Oh, yes. Are they still visiting us as often now?
Not here. I don't think I think they gave up and just... United States is not a place where you can go and give any kind of message of anti-nuclear.
No, it's... we're dominated by these crazy people. All right, next is...
What are you going to do to the United States if a contactee meets one that will become instantly famous and go to conferences and it becomes about them? It doesn't even become about the message.
No, thanks. No, thanks.
Does that make sense? Because
of course.
South America, like Ricardo, like Sisto Paz, like Luis Mustacio, it becomes about the message. It does not become about their personalities.
Got it. Okay. Different down there, totally different. All right, we have a picture of a craft now. It's a small black and white grainy photograph. Doesn't show the entire craft. Three portholes on the top.
That's the Adamski picture of the craft coming over Desert Center over the mountain, and that's part of that book that I recommended to everybody because those pictures are coming out now and... You know, and it's the bell-shaped craft. If you can see all the pictures, you see a picture of Jaime Maussan with Antonio Urzi and his wife, and Urzi in Milano is taking pictures of that craft from his attic in Milano. And I'm wondering, when I see that craft again, if those people are coming back. I don't know. That's one. It should be one of the pictures.
That craft looks like one of the German craft from the early 40s, almost.
That's what they say, the bell-shaped craft, right?
Yep. Okay, next we have Paula in front of the Integratron with someone in a blue jacket and a hat.
That's Robert Short. And Robert Short's interview is on my YouTube channel. I hope everybody goes to see it because in 1959, he was part of the Giant Rock Group. And he told me that initially when he had contact with a spaceman that he was speaking to him on a ham radio. And I thought, oh, my God, you mean you actually could speak to them in ham radio? He said, yeah, till the FBI came and told us that we're going to end up in Leavenworth unless we cancel the frequency. And they wouldn't let us go on that frequency.
So they blocked the frequency and they threatened him. That's same old stuff. Right? Yeah. I mean old. It was going on long ago. All right, next we have Adamski and three pictures of three of the bell-shaped craft showing the underside. Very clearly. Go ahead. Tell us about those.
Well, that's the photos that Adamski took. I mean, he took them through his telescope.
Those are Venus scout craft. Now, that's like a Val Thor craft.
Yes, those are. Well, I think Val Thor had a mothership, though, because I was listening to a tape that his wife talked to Wendell Stevens, and it was like a huge thing. Whose wife was Frank Strangis's wife?
Okay,
his first wife.
Yeah,
he had mentioned that she had been aboard the craft, and that it was huge, and it was parked over Lake Mead in Nevada.
Well, that would have been a different craft, not a small scout craft.
And the material that I have on Val Thor, Frank Strangis, and everything basically comes from the Wendell Stevens archive, and I will say it publicly: he was one of the greatest researchers that ever lived.
Wendell was a remarkable man. I just couldn't begin to probe the depth of all of his experiences and knowledge that he had.
Amazing. And he also did the Billy Meyer case, so he's not hoaxing anything.
Right. All right, next is we have a group of six smaller pictures of the bell-shaped craft in the bottom right and an enlargement in the top left of the frame. Venusian scout hovering. That's what the top left larger picture shows.
It's Adamski stuff. Unless it says Antonio Urzi, Jaime Maussan Productions, and that you'll get to that one.
Well, the bottom right pictures are six of them in a group, and it shows the distortion of one side of the craft, which we've seen before. It's not uniform and symmetrical. One side looks almost deformed.
Well, I've seen other pictures from Glenn Steckling's collection, you know, and basically that craft manifests. In other words, it's not so solid that it manifests.
It can morph.
It comes from nothing. Morphs.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Next, 1997, I spoke to Sir Desmond Leslie, who was going to write a book with Colonel Philip Corso together.
Do you see a very young Paula Harris with Desmond behind me with the book, raising up the book?
Now, he's a World War II hero, remember?
Yeah, but I didn't know anything about Adamski then, Jeff. I was so ignorant. I was sitting there and I said, who's Adamski? Here I was 5 days with him because we had invited him to Italy. And I didn't know what in the world they were talking about. It took me this long to go to the 1950s and 60s and do my homework.
Wow. Well, you learned. We all learned. We all have to start somewhere.
I know. I didn't know. He was right behind me. I mean, it's like he's talking about Adamski having this, instead of an umbilical cord, he had this sun ray on his.
Yeah, that was a bizarre scar.
Yeah, and he's telling me this, and I'm going, whoa, that's crazy. And, you know, he's telling me because he saw him. He saw that thing. He saw that symbol.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to the source. I'm talking to the witnesses. I'm going, this is the secret. I will never report anything that does not come from the source.
Good job. Your reputation stands right foursquare with that. Here's another picture of Leslie with Corso together.
Yeah, they were going to write a book.
Yeah,
I was listening to their conversation. They're going to write a book together. Of course, they never made it because Colonel Corso died in 1980. He only lived for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then Desmond died. He was such an eccentric character.
Yeah, well, those Brits, a war hero. Dashing, dapper fellow in the earlier picture. Yeah.
He wore a silk, bathrobe when he was in Italy. He was just a wonderful guy. I am so lucky to have met these people.
Yes, indeed. Well, Hynek for 6 years? Come on. That doesn't get any better than that. Okay, here's a picture of Jaime and Simona with...
That's Antonio Uzzi. He's a contact. I've known him for 20 years in Italy. He's taking pictures from his attic apartment, and if I ever post those on American website, they tell me it's magnetic buttons, and those are movies. Those are frames from movies. They're not even photographs.
Wow.
He's got the whole entire movie, and I was with Antonio in Mexico City, and I said to him, if I walk down the street with you, will you show me one? And sure enough, in the sky, he points to a UFO, and Mexican television comes and films it. There's something about Antonio that they just follow him. So Jaime then gave him a very sophisticated movie camera to do all the filming.
Interesting. Okay. We're going to keep going because I want to get through these photos, or at least... some of them. All right. After Jaime, there's a page with a lot of different still shots of craft. These are...
Okay. Some of them are. Elizabeth Clare. I don't know if you know that case, Beyond the Light Barrier, South Africa.
No. Yes. Yes. Yes, I do. Yes.
Okay. Yes. She met a human type being where she actually had a child by him. He took her to a planet. She's been decorated by the British government. The other part is the amicizia, or the friendship case in Italy. That's Gaspard de Lamas. And then I think there's also
Gaspard de Lamas. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And
I interviewed him last year. I went to Lake Como to interview him.
Wow. You really get around. You always have.
I want to know.
Yeah. Okay. On to Switzerland and to Billy Meyer. So here's...
Billy, he sent me Guido Mosbrugger. There's probably a picture of a guy that looks like Einstein with his white hair.
Yeah.
And he wrote the book, And Still They Fly. And he sent me Guido Mosbrugger to speak to me because Guido spoke, and he's since died, spoke English very well. And he was a very skeptical physician who wrote And Still They Fly. And that book, And Still They Fly, is amazing. It talks about what the Pleiadians said. And one of the reasons why Billy couldn't bring other people what Wendell told me was that when he was in Billy's house, it was snowing, and they would call him, and they would call Billy, and he would leave the door and walk out the door, and his footprints would disappear in the snow. Wendell spent, with Britt Elders and Lee Elders, spent a lot of time there to verifying that case. And people won't touch it with a 10-foot pole, and they're crazy, because it's really, the beings showed Billy on TV future events. It's like, I and this is what I have trouble with, Jeff, the time travel element. It's like they know the future. I have trouble with that. I mean, I'm trying to wrap my mind around it.
It's a big one. It doesn't get much bigger than that. All right. Now, the next picture is you with a bearded, white-haired gentleman in a blue shirt sitting at a table, which is Wendell Stevens. And this is...
And the pilot that was working with me on the Charles Hall case. Actually, when I did the Charles Hall case, all of it, and I did it with a pilot from Frontier, but he flew me to talk to Wendell Stevens before I went to before I went to Switzerland. I had three to 4 hours in the Tucson airport. I just couldn't go without getting all the details from Wendell first.
Wow. Yeah. Remember, he was going to come on, and he was sick or something. I can't.
Yeah, he's very sick at the end. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Kenyo, over 9 feet tall. What do we got here?
Actually, 10. He's Amicizia. The Amicizia case was in Pescara. It was in 1956. These beings came from another planet, but because the Italians didn't know what to name them, because in 1956 they named them W-56s. Some of them were very tall, like Kenyo. Some of them were very small, three feet tall. They looked like midgets. And the deal was that they would bond with these 10 Italians. Two were couples that had wives. And as an experiment to see if they could live among humans, and if you want to get the book, it's called Mass Contacts by Stefano Brescia, and it basically, they said, as long as you guys don't fight among yourselves, we will stay and physically with you in Pescara, where they were there in that area.
Uh-huh.
They were vegetarians, so the people had to get them truckloads of vegetables, which they just translocated them into the castle where they were living. The case is so interesting. Timothy Good did the case. I had done it already because I was in Italy already, so I could talk to everybody except Gaspare Di Lama that I talked to last year, and he's 92 years old.
Huh.
So, and they're physical people who said, we could get along with you as long as you guys don't become hostile
right.
and start fighting.
Well, that's not going to last long, is it?
It lasted 10 years, so they did pretty good. But
that's
then after 10 years, they went away. They had an underwater base there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Next picture looks like we're back at the... Where are we? At Ricardo Gonzalez, Dr. Mustafa Martins?
Okay, the three of these guys.
That's in Chile
guys.
Again.
No, that is the Chilca Desert in Peru.
Oh, Peru.
Yeah. Do you see the UFO over their head?
Sure I do. Yeah,
these are the three contactees that I interviewed, and wherever they go, I mean, Ricardo anymore, in broad daylight, he doesn't even look up anymore. The three of them, the two guys were followers of Sisto Paz Wells and his brother Charlie in the 1970s. If you look at a timeline, the 1970s began a massive amount of activity in Peru. It was done through meditation and through automatic writing. So the beings would say when they would come and where.
Hmm. Wow. So many stories, so many amazing cases. I did them all.
But I also read about it. I had to read what I could about the cases. Then I interviewed them via Skype, but you know I don't speak Spanish. So I had to get an interpreter for all those guys.
Wow. All right, next pictures. It looks like we're at Shasta or somewhere.
Yeah, you see the tree?
Yeah.
On the left-hand side,
yeah,
you see the trees?
Yeah. That's where it was, huh?
That's where we were standing next to the tree. Yeah. Those are the people that were with me. It was seen by... it's on Grant Cameron's YouTube channel, because I dragged Grant into the sand flats last year, and he filmed me retelling the whole story. So if people want to know the story of the contact, go to Grant Cameron's YouTube channel. It's on there in detail, and he also talked to the witnesses.
Very good. Okay, next picture is... There's five people and you, three men, two women. They've got hats on. That's the same group that you were with at Shasta, I guess, huh?
Yeah, the Shasta people, yeah.
They're all the Latinos who go to this thing?
Yes, they're all Spanish-speaking. However, I'm trying to get Ricardo to do something in Crestone here at the end of August in English. Because we can't keep going to, you know, it's all in Spanish unless you bring an interpreter, you know. So he said yes, and I had brought him here to Crestone before. Crestone was a location that Stephen Greer did the movie Sirius. I was a consultant on that film. I saw the UFOs with Stephen Greer. I know they're there.
Yeah.
And I have 5 acres of land, and Ricardo said yes, he would come to Crestone and do it.
Where did Greer hold his events?
Well,
he used to take people on 3-day events and things, events.
The movie Sirius was a 6-day event, and it was in Crestone.
That's what I thought.
One of the reasons I bought the land.
Okay.
Was because Crestone is the darkest place on the planet, so you can see them. See the whole Milky Way.
Wow.
I mean, you see everything.
Wow. Okay. Next picture is a large group of people out in the sunshine. With a tent, or just a little kind of a covered gazebo tent in the background.
Went to Argentina. They did a meditation for peace. This is Ricardo Gonzalez.
Uh-huh.
And they do a 3-day meditation for peace with over 1,000 people. And I swear to you, there wasn't one piece of trash and nobody smoked anything. I've never seen anything like it in my life. All they did was he lectured and they said mantras and so forth to bring peace to the world. I mean, that's consciousness. That's the only thing that's going to work.
Okay, we've got it's a marquee or a flyer for your Laughlin, Nevada event coming up this November.
Yeah, I really want to bring that kind of consciousness to the UFO field. It's harder than you can imagine. Because it's a loving event. It's a wonderful event. Last year, I had Clifford Stone interviewed by Grant Cameron.
Mm-hmm.
I had Reuben Langdon, who did the citizen hearings. I had, this year, I'm having Danny Sheehan. This year, it's called The Return of the Star People, because I want to go into the Native American and the indigenous people and stories. I want to get their stories.
Of course. Well, they've got a lot to offer, a huge amount. Okay, next up is a drawing of the 10-foot-tall fellow you saw in the woods.
Yeah, that's Antarel. That's Antarel, yes.
Okay. Next, we got two covers of books. Ricardo Gonzalez, Contact from Planet Apu.
Yeah, that's in English. That's on Amazon.
Okay. And then one of your books, All the Above and Beyond. Okay.
Well, that has all the Latin American contactees word-for-word interviews in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope you get time to look through Bob Pratt's book at some point. I think you'll be intrigued. Very interesting research that man did. All right, next up we have Howard Menger.
Yep, we have Howard, and you should have all the Val Thor stuff, and a letter from August Roberts, who was the photographer
took the pictures of that daytime UFO event out at the Menger farm.
And you know, I talked to my colleagues, they don't even know who Menger is. And here, these beings had given Menger fruits and vegetables, and I have photographs of the envelopes with the laboratories. He had them analyzed that. You know, Menger was an amazing case because the beings, if you read From Outer Space to You, at the very last, and I know you'll be interested in this, told Menger that we had to keep our blood alkaline so we could live longer. And you know that
funniest
blood
thing
causes cancer.
Of course it does. You go acidic, you're in trouble.
You're in trouble. And these beings are saying that to Menger in Highbridge, New Jersey in 1952.
Wow. That's quite a message.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, it sure is. We've got pictures now with white shapes next to some people. And the one guy in the picture is a white...
That's Menger. That's Menger and Connie.
Why'd they black out his face? Or they whited it out?
I don't know. These are from the Wendell Stevens archive. So these are Wendell Stevens pictures. And that's Menger and Connie. And they're putting their arms around the beings. And the beings come out as light. These are the Venusians, the Venus beings that came in, you know, like with Adamski that followed him around in his pictures. They were in his orchard.
Black and white pictures.
Them.
Polaroids, they look like. No, they're not. They're prints.
They're black and white prints, but whatever the radiation field is around these people, they came up pure white.
Well.
But they're people. But they're
most
people,
interesting.
People.
Yes, the people, people. I gotcha. Okay, next we have Menger. It looks like a book. There's a book there.
Oh, there's a book there. That's Edward Condon. He's here at the University of Colorado. He
looks almost like Menger at a glance. So that's Ed Condon.
He's got his wife next to him, and he's saying to Condon, look, this really happened.
So Menger is talking to Condon, who's on the right, correct?
With the glasses.
And he's got the book. It looks kind of like a Robert McNamara sort. He's talking.
But that's a historical picture, because
that's a
what
very
is he doing
historical
here
picture.
In 1969 if he denied his story? What's he doing here?
Funny. All right. Very good. Howard and Rose Menger's home in Highbridge. This photograph, I've not seen the full wide shot like that before. That's one of Augie's pictures.
Yeah, it's one of Augie's. And I actually have about... 20 of them, because Augie was told that there were three beings there, but he didn't. But Menger never pointed them out, and so he took pictures of everybody. But these guys are overdressed, and I saw the being in the Adamski photo too. And the guy had on a suit and tie. I mean,
they're dressed like movie stars. Come on,
but they don't know how to. They don't know how to dress. This is outside.
They don't know how to dress down. That's for sure.
They don't
sure.
know how to dress down.
That's
so
funny.
They're overdressed.
So there's Val Thor, and that's Frank Stranges at the top with the glasses on. His book, The Stranger at the Pentagon, remains one of the most enigmatic books about this whole visiting people phenomenon. And there they are.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sorry I didn't mean him. You know, I met almost everybody, but I never got a chance to talk to Frank Stranges, you know, and I would have loved to, because I do believe that story. And
These people just, look, you look at the pictures, and we've done this on the program before. You look at the pictures of Valiant Thor and his the two women and the man that are with him. One guy is called Commander Don, I think.
Yeah, Don with two N's, yes, and Jill. Yeah. The girl is Jill.
Yeah, and the other girl's she's shading her eyes with her right hand.
Well, there's only three of them there. There's only Jill.
So who's
Don,
the woman in the blue sweater shading her eyes?
I don't think that I think it's from the tape. I have the audio tape. There were only three of them there.
Okay.
There are only three. There's just Jill, Don, and they're sitting together. But Augie was never told which ones they were.
So, well, I think Augie could figure it out. Somehow he tripped over the obvious. And yeah,
there were 100
and
people there. Did you see how many people there were?
Yeah,
there?
Yeah. And you know, if you look at some of the pictures on the other side, back behind Valiant Thor, and you look at the people behind them, they're all staring at Thor and the others.
Well, yeah, but first of all, they're overdressed.
That's it.
It's like if you go to a picnic and these people come in suit and ties, you know. But you know what shocks me, though, Jeff? Nobody from the East Coast, nobody has gone to Highbridge, has looked at that house, because contacts came from behind that house. He even had to cut their hair. You know, Howard had to cut their hair because they had long blonde hair, and they would, in those days, there weren't any hippies. And nobody has done any research on this. There's not one of my colleagues that I can talk to about this case except Frank Chile.
Frank knows.
Nobody.
Yeah, I know. It's something that I was very, very fortunate through his good graces to be able to present on this program. Fascinating story. And I, too, wish I had been able to talk to Frank Stranges.
Yeah, and you know, I still want to go back to Benger's house. I want to go behind there, behind the house where that orchard is, and take
Boy,
a look.
You are a researcher and porter.
Well, maybe they're there.
They could still be.
Or they know I'm going to go there, and
that,
they'll
that
be
would
there.
Be probably as likely as anything. Okay.
Well, of course.
Suell Clarion visitor.
Okay, here we go with the Mauri Giacavallo case. This is the guy that Mauri Giacavallo met in downtown Rome. He is from Clarion. He looks like us.
Tell our listeners what Clarion is.
Clarion is a planet. Is one of the evidently an off-world location.
It's in our galaxy.
Yeah, and when Maurizio told me about these people, he said when he went aboard ship, there were a bunch of them, and that's what you're going to see, the Polaroids. He said, tell the world. And what happened, the Japanese came in and they took over that case. In fact, there's some Japanese writing there. But some of them look like us, and some of them, he said, were hybrid gray, and they look very strange, and you'll see those Polaroids. And the book is called Beyond the Heavens. I had it printed in English.
Good for you. All right,
well,
here
too.
Yeah, I know. You are really amazing. Here's this hybrid with the green eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like a little female. They both look female. It's hard to know.
Yeah, they are female.
Different facial characteristics, but the big eyes.
Yeah, if you get that book that I just mentioned, Visitors Without Passports, one of the ways you can tell is if they have very, very blue eyes. Of course, the being I met had brown eyes, but for the most part, even human beings
that you meet have
blue eyes.
Mentioned that the book, they have 57 identified people.
Okay, the manual
that was the manual.
That was a manual. Yeah, it was like the SOM 101 manual taking care of crashes. You know.
Well, they have crash retrieval teams ready 24/7. They have for decades, many decades, and they jump on these things and they shut the areas down, and nobody gets in until they're completely sanitized and swept. And that's what Clifford Stone did.
Yeah, even the Virginia case down in Brazil, the Americans came in and took that.
They were there first.
Yeah,
that's
people don't understand.
Nobody knows Virginia anymore. Nobody talks about it. I did.
I'm glad you did, because you can tell them that all the beings are not gray. Those little beings had reddish skin.
Right. They look nothing like grays. I did that story from front to back at least twice. Many, many, many programs on that. Fascinating case.
But it's real. I mean...
Oh, of course it's real.
It's real because Roger Lear went down there, talked to the surgeon, and Marco Charisse, that was the policeman that had the little being on his lap. Everybody thinks they're so hostile. I mean, people are crazy. I don't know. I think what we do is we take our human way of thinking, good and evil. In fact, when I'm doing a lecture, the first thing they ask me is if they're good or if they're evil, and I feel like saying, well, if an alien race comes here and sees us murdering each other and pedophile and all that, they're going to go back to their planet and say we're evil. You know, you can't use good and evil, which are religious terms, for extraterrestrial races that are here for their own agenda, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I was just thinking back on Clifford's story and how it was fascinating. I had him on. You can ask him. He was on many times.
He'll come on for you again, and he's so good.
I tell him, and please invite him. I'd love to talk to him again. It's been too long.
Well, I can talk to him. He lives in Roswell, as you know.
Yeah. Well, let's just tell him he's invited any time, or we'll get a night for him, and you can come on with him if you want. That'd be wonderful.
Well, he has so much. He did 12 crash retrievals, Jeff, and three of them were in Vietnam, and the Vietnam stories are unbelievable.
Oh, they're weird. I remember them now.
Do you remember them?
It's coming back now. I remember the B-52 one.
Yes. Yes.
But
also the one in the cave where the beings are watching the war and turn around to Clifford and say, what are you people doing over here?
Yeah.
I mean, do you know that they're just, I call them cosmic anthropologists, Most of them are observing, but our field keeps demonizing all this
stuff. Who would, I mean, honestly, if they're coming here as often as they are, what kind of a report are they going to take back to their planet? They're just going to take a pen or a writing utensil or whatever they use and just put a big X over Earth. Go, stay away. No chance. These people are on the way out again.
They're so primitive. They haven't got a clue. They're doing the same thing they did in 1945. They're just doing the same stuff.
I think
stuff.
That this species of ours, such as it is, not only has been tweaked, of course, but I think it's crawled up out of the muck and destroyed itself many times over the 4.5 billion years this planet's been here. I think this is not our first time here.
No, I'm sure. I'm positive. But did you ever think that maybe that with the genetic harvesting that we think is so horrible, what they're doing is collecting DNA so they could reseed the planet? So
I think that's going on. I do.
Yeah, they're going to destroy themselves. Because I love the movie AI. Do you ever remember Artificial Intelligence, the movie?
Didn't see it.
You didn't see it. At the very end, the beings go to the little boy. And they go, you've got the memories of the mothers and fathers and the kids and everything that used to be here. That is so rich. We want that memory so we could reseed the planet.
Wow, interesting. I didn't see the movie. No, I don't get a chance
to
go to many movies.
It's Spielberg with Kubrick, who did 2001, and those guys are super, super insiders.
And this movie was just called AI?
No, it's called Artificial Intelligence.
Okay. Well,
Spielberg and Kubrick, yeah.
You know, all we see are cursory stories and superficial glances at the actual field of AI, but it is being pursued around the clock, just like Nano. They're pushing nanotechnology around the clock. Now, I can't get a good guest on Nano anymore. They've all been told to shut up.
Colonel Corso was worried about that. He said it's a natural progression of technology, but unless our spirituality equals our technology,
it doesn't.
Are dangerous species.
Paula, it doesn't.
We are dangerous.
We're dangerous. It doesn't. We don't.
We're
I'm
dangerous.
Sorry. I don't mean to say, I'm not speaking for you. I'm speaking for myself. I don't think it does, and I see a widening gap all the time. That those people in the military-industrial congressional mass media complex don't have our best interests at heart. Even if they had hearts, they wouldn't.
Well, you know, I don't spend a lot of brain time on that because
it's downtime.
Really,
it's negative time. You've got positive things to do.
I want to do something like Laughlin, where it inspires people, and they come out of there going, "We're going to change the world. We're not like that."
Which hotel are you at in Laughlin?
The Aquarius, the one we were always at. Same thing, same story.
That's the one place I went. I lasted about half a day, and I had to leave. I just couldn't deal with it. I didn't like it. I did see something neat, though. I went out the back. You know how they got a big walkway right along the river?
Yeah.
I looked over the edge, and looking up at me, I'm not kidding, were two beavers. They were swimming by, and they were hanging out right there. I looked down. They were looking up at me, and they just made a little circle, and then they went on downriver with the flow. So that was a fun thing at Laughlin. That I remember.
Well, you have communication with the animal life.
Jaime was there, I think. Saw Jaime briefly in the lobby.
Yeah, he's there every year. I'm the only person that has him every year at my conference. I don't care what people think. The guy has the best UFO videos on planet Earth.
Come on, he's sacrificed so much of his life for this cause.
He has, and he's bashed like crazy.
To what end? What are these people thinking? Leave him alone.
They don't look at his work. Nobody looks at anybody's anything. They don't read anybody's books.
Well, they're so consumed with their egos and their little place on the turf. They've got to have it notched out. I've never seen a more tawdry group. Sorry to say.
Well, what it is we're not looking at this as a study. I want it to be serious, you know.
Oh, this is showbiz. It's celebrity. That's what they're doing.
But how can you study a subject and just read your own book?
You can't.
I know.
You can't. Of course you can't.
I mean, if I get a degree in anthropology, I got to read everybody's book.
Well, you
if
have.
I'm going to get a degree in it. I've got to read everything. Otherwise, how do I know the field of anthropology? And these people don't—they have no idea. About
who reads anymore, Paula?
Yeah,
really?
I know.
Not many.
It's internet. I know. It's
internet. All staring and reacting. It's not reading and thinking and cogitating anymore. No, I mean, there are exceptions. Come on, I'm just speaking in generalities.
No, I have to do it because I can't do all of it. Like, I'm reading Grant Cameron's book now, and it's excellent, Managing Magic. It's about the history of the intelligence cover-up. But, you know, I can't do that part, so I've got to read what he did in order to figure it out.
Oh, very good. Well, I am amazed to talk to you again after all these years, and you are the most ferocious researcher that I may have ever had on the program.
I just doing it the right way, Jeff. I mean, how, you know, I admire everybody in their work, and I have to know about it, and
yeah.
I wish that we had a college course on this, and I don't like the cartoonization of our field, and I really enjoyed speaking to you because you have a background.
Well,
you
thank
have
you.
A very solid, wow, background.
I've heard a lot. This fierce desire for knowledge you have should be inspirational to at least some of our listeners, and that's the way to do it. Thank you, Paula. Great to talk to you again. And
well,
let's do
you,
it
Jeff.
Anytime you're ready. Before the conference, whatever, just let me know through Frank.
I will. Thank you so much.
Okay, you take care.
I will. You
All right.
too.
Thanks.
Bye.
Good night. Paula Harris. And one of a kind, that one. She is remarkable. And we will be back in just a few.